Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, "My dear demigods, do not be perturbed by this. It is due to the severe austerity and full determination of the son of King Uttanapad, who is now fully absorbed in thought of me. He has obstructed the universal breathing process." "You can safely return to your respective homes. I shall stop this boy in his severe acts of austerities, and you will be saved from this situation." Purport. Here one word, Sangatatma, is misinterpreted by the Mayavadi philosophers, who say that the self of Dhruv Maharaj became one with the Supreme Self, the Personality of Godhead. The Mayavadi philosophers want to prove by this word that the supersoul and the individual soul become united in this way, and that after such unification, the individual soul has no separate existence. But here it is clearly said by the Supreme Lord that Dhruv Maharaj was so absorbed in meditation on the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he himself, the universal consciousness, was attracted to Dhruva. In order to please the demigods, he wanted to go himself to Dhruv Maharaj to stop him from this severe austerity. The Mayavadi philosopher's conclusion that the supersoul and the individual soul become united is not supported by this statement. Rather, the supersoul, the Personality of Godhead, wanted to stop Dhruv Maharaj from this severe austerity. By pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one pleases everyone, just as by watering the root of a tree, one satisfies every branch, twig and leaf of the tree. Yeah, all right, we missed a word out, but got it more or less. Two examples are given in this verse. Srila Prabhupada is giving one here. Just by watering the root of a tree, one satisfies it. The water goes to its leaves, twigs, roots. No, wait a minute. Water the root of the tree goes to the leaves, twigs, branches, flowers, fruits. And as by giving food to the stomach, all the other organs and limbs of the body are nourished. So similarly, the root of all existence, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if one satisfies him, then everything else, everyone else is satisfied. Srila Prabhupada's purport continued. If one can attract the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one naturally attracts the whole universe, because Krishna is the supreme cause of the universe. All the demigods were afraid of being totally vanquished by suffocation, but the Personality of Godhead assured them that Dhruv Maharaj was a great devotee of the Lord and was not about to annihilate everyone in the universe. A devotee is never envious of other living entities. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 4th canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Dhruv Maharaj Leaves Home for the Forest. Demigods are afraid. Therefore, they have approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what they do when they can't work their problems out by themselves, when by their own strength, they can't solve the problem, and there's a big demon, they go to the Supreme Lord. And they expect him to come and sort out all their problems, which he usually does. They might have been thinking that Dhruv Maharaj was a big demon, even though he was born of a godly king, but he'd been rejected by his own father. And therefore, the demigods might have thought that now he's become inimical to us because of this. He's turned against us and all the godly forces in the universe. That actually happened in recent history in this Kali Yuga. There was one prince or man, he was born of a Hindu princess who was kidnapped by a Muslim king, and he was raised as a Hindu, and then when he wanted to go to enter the Jagannath temple in Puri, he was forbidden because he was considered a Muslim. And then he became a and anti-Muslim or super-Muslims. Well, that's not really the essence of Islam, but anyway, he became very inimical to what is considered Hinduism, and he attacked the Jagannath temple and destroyed so many temples all over Orissa and Bengal. Kalapaha, his name is. You're from Orissa? The name is well known even now. He was a terror. When was he living? About before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was it? After? Okay. Dhruva Maharaj, then maybe the demigods weren't aware that Dhruva Maharaj had undertaken his austerity under the guidance of Narad Muni, who is Devarshi Narad, who's also one of the demigods, considered a rishi among the demigods, quite different to the rest of the demigods, who, although godly, are not really like rishis, they're more like bogies, that's why they become demigods. So they can enjoy the facilities offered by the Supreme Lord while doing some management service on his behalf within the universe. And Dhruva Maharaj undertook his austerity for the sake of getting a kingdom greater than the demigods, which might have also caused them some consternation. He wanted to get a kingdom better than any other. Actually, if Narad Muni hadn't approached him, he might have, it's a speculation, but he might have gone that way. He wanted to get a situation bigger than any of the other demigods. And he was in an angry mood. So in that mood, if someone's angry and in a revengeful mood and they get some power, then you better watch out. Because anger is such an emotion that one tends to do things without consideration of what is right and wrong, what is just and unjust. So if one has power and is angry and is revengeful, then he may do all kinds of horrible things. Just like if there's a foreign power occupying a country, you see. Just like when the Nazis, they were occupying pretty much the Nazis of Germany, they were occupying all the adjacent lands. So if some of the occupied people, they would snipe and kill one German soldier, so that in retaliation the Germans would just like wipe out a whole area just to warn the people that we are in control here. We are more powerful. So it's not fair, but if you're a demon, then fairness is not high on your agenda. So the demigods were afraid, and they approached Lord Vishnu, who told them, don't be afraid. Fear, anxiety, these are experienced by persons who don't have great faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the list of godly qualities mentioned by Lord Krishna at the beginning of the 16th chapter, the first is abhayam, fearlessness. So why should one be afraid? If one has faith, rakshishatiti vishvaso, one has faith that the Supreme Lord will protect me, then why should one be afraid? Of course, it might be natural if, for instance, someone came in to this assembly wildly brandishing a sword, it might be natural to feel afraid. Or a more likely or more common situation, when you suddenly find there's a snake, so you come across a snake, then immediately, if there's a snake, you'll feel afraid. Now in Bengal, where you live, in Mayapur, there's still many snakes in the rainy season especially. So you never know, you may go in the bathroom and there's a cobra to welcome you. It's not uncommon in Bengal, especially in the rainy season. So it's natural to feel some fear, but abhayam sattva sangshubhi jnana yoga vyavastitihi. If one is situated in jnana yoga, or knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Lord, then even though it may be natural to feel some fear, and just like that, suddenly you're confronted by a snake. one is generally situated in a situation of fearlessness. One is not suffering from anxiety, because he knows that Krishna is protecting him. So the demigods, they're gods. This is these qualities. Abhayam sattva sangshuddhihi, to a purification of one's existence. Jnana yoga vyavastiti, being situated in knowledge of one's existential position, of everything, of Krishna's supremacy. These are mentioned at the beginning of the 16th chapter as the godly qualities. And then we have the demigods who are afraid, which isn't surprising if you find that you can't breathe. If suddenly you can't breathe, it's a frightening situation. We take our breath for granted. We don't think about it. We don't think, now breathe in, breathe out, we take it for granted. But if for some reason it stops, then it's very fearful, because we can't go along without breathing. What is that? Nishvaso naiva vishvaso kadarudho bhavishyati. We should be afraid. We should be aware that our breathing can at any time stop. It's not guaranteed. Just like I was thinking this morning when it was announced in the class. Of course, I'm not criticizing that, but it was stated that this morning's Bhagavatam class will be given by His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami. So, well, here I am, I'm giving it. But at that time, there's no guarantee that I would be giving it, because there's no guarantee that I would be alive, or that this temple would be here, or that Bombay would be here, because you never know what's going to happen in future. Therefore, in Islam, the practice is to say that such and such will happen, inshallah, if God wishes. So it's a good thing, actually. It's a good thing to realize that we can say, I am going here and there, I shall do this and that. There will be, after 2 days, there will be this, such and such an event will take place, but inshallah. Harer Icha, if God desires. Ultimately, everything is in His hands. So the demigods, they're feeling afraid, and not only afraid for themselves, afraid for the whole universe, which is choked up. And it's a pretty severe situation, isn't it? If everyone looks like everything's going to, the whole universe is just going to stop breathing, that means everyone's going to stop, everyone's just going to be dead. So they went to the Supreme Lord for a solution, being unable to find one themselves. Dhruva Maharaj was eventually awarded a position greater than even that of Brahma, inasmuch as he was awarded a planet on which the Supreme Lord Himself resided. And actually that he was fit for that in the material term. He was fit to have a greater planet than all the demigods, because by his austerities he had become superior to all of them. They were all afraid of his activities, even though he was just a young boy. But the great demigods who are so powerful, and they can fight with great powerful demons, but they're all completely flummoxed. You don't know what that word means. Flummoxed, bewildered, or they didn't know what to do. They were stymied, is another word. They didn't know what to do. Because of Dhruva Maharaj's powerful austerity. So he was already superior to all of the demigods. Because all of them put together couldn't work out what to do. They were all defeated by him, even though he wasn't even attacking them. He didn't have any intention of causing harm to everyone, as Srila Prabhupada notes. A devotee is never envious of other living entities. So Dhruva Maharaj wasn't performing this austerity to harm anyone. It just happened like that. And it wasn't that the Supreme Lord had to fulfill his desire, as the Mimamsa, Karma Mimamsa, as you would say. But he himself just, he went to Dhruva Maharaj just to bless him by showing him that, yes, you've become very powerful, congratulations, but actually, it's all useless, because even a piece of dust from my lotus feet, I'm paraphrasing Lord Vishnu here, is far more valuable than all the whole universe. What is a piece of dust? Devotees, they perform austerities, they follow strict principles, they dedicate their whole life. And if people ask, what for? You say, well, I just want to get a piece of dust. Well, that sounds pretty stupid, because, you know, dust is, that's not really dust, is it? Dust is everywhere. I mean, we sweep it out of the house every day. Now, I'm working hard, and I'm buying a big car and a big apartment, and you just want a piece of dust. But the dust that the devotees desire is the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas, the dust of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So Dhruva Maharaj was to realize that even though he got a planet which is greater than Lord Brahma's, that was awarded to him by Lord Vishnu. He had already, by having darshan of Lord Vishnu, he understood that everything I did up to now was shrama eva hi kevalam, simply, and it was pretty tough shram, pretty hard work, but it was only shram. It was only a severe endeavor up until the point that he was inspired in Krishna consciousness. Of course, Narad Muni had given him the mantra to chant, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. But his intention was different. He's mentioned by Rupa Goswami Prabhupada as the Artharthi. He's an example in Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna states, four kinds of pious people approach me. So Dhruva Maharaj is mentioned as the example of the Artharthi, one who wanted some material gain. So he got that. He got a fantastic gain, but the real gain was that he's on the planet where Lord Vishnu resides. Now it's interesting, Dhruva Maharaj, he wasn't afraid. The demigods became afraid, but Dhruva Maharaj, he was fully confident of fulfilling his goal. He was determined. Therefore, the very name Dhruva, or the word Dhruva, means fixed. Dhruva Tara. That's the one, all the stars are moving in the sky, but the Dhruva Tara is not moving. They all move around the Dhruva Tara, which substantiates Vedic astronomy. The very name Dhruva Tara is given, that all the stars and planets, they move around Dhruva Tara to give respect by doing pradakshina. They're giving respect to Lord Vishnu, and they're also giving respect to Dhruv Maharaj, who resides there as the servant of Lord Vishnu. So he was fixed. This is a quality of a kshatriya. He has to be fixed. If you're not fixed in your determination, you can't do anything as difficult as fighting. Later, Dhruva Maharaj described how he was fighting. So, if one is to achieve anything worthwhile, or even not worthwhile, to achieve anything, one has to be fixed in his determination and keep on going. Of course, it's wise to ascertain, first of all, if the goal that you're going to work so hard for is worth it. Dhruva Maharaj, he aspired for the most or the highest material goal he could think of. And then as soon as he got darshan of Lord Vishnu, he understood that it's not worth it, it's all useless. So anything one may aspire for, this shows that anything one may aspire for, I aspire to be a multi-millionaire, multi-crorepati, but it's all useless. Dhruva Maharaj has already given the example that it's all useless, because real wealth is to have Krishna Prema Dhan. This word dhan, wealth, is often used in Vaishnav literature in conjunction with the word prema. To have love of Krishna, that is real wealth. Anything else is not wealth. Everything else is simply a weight around the neck that drags one down to hell. The real wealth is to have love for Krishna. The Vaishnava, who is a kinchan, he has nothing in this material world, but he is far more wealthy than the big, famous, respected, wealthy people of this world. He's got actual wealth. Whereas the apparently wealthy people of this world, they are simply carrying around titles, carrying around money, which will drag them down. And they're always full of anxiety. Sada samadvigna dhiyo sadgrahat. Their consciousness is always full of anxiety because they've accepted that which is not real. Now the demigods there also, here you see, full of anxiety. Because they haven't accepted Krishna consciousness in full. Therefore they must be in anxiety. Lord Krishna's first words of instruction in the Bhagavad Gita. What are those? Who can say? Asocha Yandva Sochastra. Pragyavadans Chabhashasa. Gatasuna Gutasana Socha. Nanu Sochanti Pandita. That you are lamenting for that which is not worth lamenting for. You're speaking as if you are learned. So the same word comes up at the end, the last instruction of Bhagavad Gita. Ma shuchaha. Don't worry. Don't lament. I'm with you. So Krishna, first of all, chastised Arjuna that you're speaking as if you are learned, but you're not learned, and the proof of that is that you are lamenting. Shochati iti shudra. One who laments is called a shudra. So you're speaking as if a pandit, but you don't actually know. So then Krishna, he spoke Bhagavad Gita, which is actually Pragyavada. It's actually learned words. Whereas Arjuna was simply speaking as if he knew what he was talking about, but actually he didn't. Then Krishna gave actual knowledge, Bhagavad Gita. And the conclusion is, well, Krishna gave his learned words, in brief, Krishna gave a whole synopsis of everything in existence, including himself, Krishna, Arjuna, the Jiva, and the relationship between them, and the situation of the material world, why we're in the material world, how we can get out of the material world, what is the nature of this material world. So it's really Krishna's words, that's really Pragyavada. There's nothing in comparison to Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. He summarized the whole situation of material existence. So after discussing karma, jnana, yoga, and all these different things, which people tend to think are very good, Krishna said, well, now I told you all about it, and here's the conclusion, just surrender to me. That's the solution to all your problems. As is stated in a different way, Srila Prabhupada has quoted in the purport, that it, because we're not watering the root of the tree, we're busy watering the leaves, the twigs, the branches, the fruits, the flowers, but because we're not watering the root, therefore we don't get the desired result. So Krishna says, you surrender to me, I'll deliver you from all sinful reactions. Karma, jnana, and yoga, they cannot deliver you from sinful reactions. You see, all the points in Bhagavad Gita are expanded on in Srimad Bhagavatam. That same point comes up again when Parikshit Maharaja asked Sukadeva, how can people get free from sin? And then Sukadeva offered karma, prayaschitta. Parikshit didn't accept it. And then Sukadeva offered jnana, and again Parikshit didn't accept it. And then he offered, what's the famous verse? How can one be completely freed from all sinful reactions? So that they don't come up again. Anyone? That's one for you, that's all for sure. You're not getting it now? Kechit? Anyone? Kechit kevalaya bhaktya. I just said this the other day. Vasudeva parayanaha aghandhan vanti kachnena niharamiva bhaskar. That by performing prayaschitta, it doesn't do anything to stop the desire for performing sinful activities. So one performs prayaschitta and then just goes right back and performs sinful activities again. Or by jnana, one can understand what is right and wrong, and that it's better to refrain from all sinful activities, but it doesn't actually destroy the desire for sinful activities, but only by pure devotion to Krishna and actually being attached to Krishna, Vasudeva Parayana, aghandam vanti kachnena, then all these sinful reactions are completely cleared away, just like the strong sunlight destroys the, or drives away the fog. So, Ma Shucha, don't be afraid, don't lament. This is the situation of one who has accepted Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. And for one who has not accepted, then he must always lament. He must always be in anxiety. Because asadgahat, he's accepted because of accepting that which is not real. He accepts the body to be the self and is therefore always in anxiety for the body, which is absurd. Because the body is temporary and we're not the body. It's absolutely absurd. But everyone in this material world is in an, we're all in an absurd situation of identifying with the body and being very concerned with it. And it may appear that various learned people, they all have very good theories of ethics and morality and philosophy, but basically it's just a bunch of mad people babbling, and they don't know what they're talking about. The whole, all of human culture, devoid of Krishna consciousness, is summarized in the very first words of Bhagavad Gita of Lord Krishna, Ashochananvasocha strong pragyavadams chabhashasa. You're lamenting for that which is not worth lamenting for, and speaking as if you're learned, but actually you're not. So the solution to all this madness that goes on in the name of philosophy, culture, art, science, and so on, human civilization, is sarvadhaman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami mashucha. To surrender to Krishna, as Dhruva Maharaj ultimately did by the grace of Narad Muni, and became immediately situated in total fearlessness. The whole situation of this material world is fear. That is the defining characteristic. There are several, fear is one of them, of this material world. Bhayam dvitiya bhinivesita syat ishadape tasya viparyaya smritihi. We're all in a situation of fearfulness due to accepting that which is not the actual reality because of enviousness of Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. There's one other point here about the Mayavadis. Sangatatma, misinterpreted by the Mayavadis, to mean that Dhruva Maharaj merged into the existence of the Supreme Lord. Of course, if there were any Mayavadis nowadays who actually studied Bhagavatam, we might be almost pleased to meet them. Because most of them, what we call Mayavadis nowadays, they're not really Mayavadis. They don't really have any vada. They don't really have any philosophy. It's just some kind, it's non-philosophy. You'll meet the average person who we call a Mayavadi. They don't really have any vada or worked out theory of what they believe in. They're not even sure what they believe in, or they don't even want to define what they believe in. Everything is just vague and nebulous, and just, it's all the same. And that's it. There is no philosophy. So, the Mayavadi philosophers Srila Prabhupada is referring to here, at least they might have had some philosophy you can discuss with, but most people nowadays, they're so aphilosophical, it's very difficult to discuss anything philosophically with them. There's a difficulty that the preachers of Krishna consciousness face in propagating Krishna consciousness philosophy is that the great majority of the people of this world are brought up on cartoons and sports on TV, and they haven't a clue of any kind of philosophy whatsoever. So it's very difficult to talk philosophically to people who, their whole mindset is ruled by cricket matches and cartoons on TV and Miss World contests and no philosophy, just completely animalistic. I mean, even more animalistic than people who make a philosophy about being animals. Anyway, I'll finish there, and Hare Krishna, if anyone has any question or comment or protest, please speak now or hold your peace until tomorrow. Yes, what's your question? Yes, please. Hare Krishna. That's not a question, that's the answer to every question. Right. Hare Krishna. Actually, this Krishnadas Babaji, Prabhupada's godbrother, devotees would go and ask him questions, and his only reply was, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he was so absorbed in chanting the holy names that whoever asked him whatever question, they realized that, yes, actually that's the answer. If I say it, you won't believe me, but when he said it, it was obvious, that's the answer. And the only reason we have any questions is because we don't really chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Alright.
You made a reference to Islam.
Yes.
And you used to know, what according to Islam is the highest goal of life? Is it the same as the Krishna?
Well, I'm not an expert on Islam, and as far as I know, in general, in Islam, most people are not encouraged to think. They're just told to follow. Is that right? You're nodding your head there. I did read something about it recently. That people are not encouraged to be very philosophical. You just follow what you're told and don't think, because thinking is dangerous. So this is what I read. What is the goal? Well, it's probably different according to different exponents of Islam. Generally, the idea is to go to what's the name of the Behist, heaven, and enjoy. That's the general idea. According to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the ultimate goal of Islam is to worship the Supreme Lord, who's bluish with a threefold bending form. But I guess most Muslims wouldn't accept that. But in general, it's the same as in what you might call Hinduism. That most people, here we're talking about more traditional Hinduism, not modern age Hinduism. But most people, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, are karmis. They're interested in going to heaven. And a few people among them are more like gyanis, who are interested in personal liberation. So you'll find in the among the Islamic folds, there are the Sufis also, and dervishes who are interested in some kind of mystical union with God. But in general, most people, all over the world, most people for religion is, for them is dharma hi pavargasya. Religion is meant for material enjoyment, either in this life or the next, by the grace of God. More detailed answer you'd have to ask a scholar of Islam, which I'm not. Yes, please. Yes. Sorry, I didn't hear because the sound wasn't amplified.
That's a very important question. We are going to Krishna and
What's the question, sir?
Hinduism.
Yeah.
Why we are not a united force? Why we always
why
new generation is not following.
Why Hinduism is not united? Well, that's
why,
the,
why they're not united?
That's the main question. Let's discuss this. Well, I can't speak for Hinduism because actually, I quoted twice in the lecture. Lord Krishna's first instruction to Arjuna, Ashochananda Sochastwam, Pragyavadam Chabhashase, Gatasuna Gutasun Nanu Sochita Pandita, Nanu Socha, that Krishna first said to Arjuna, while speaking as if you are learned, you're speaking in an unlearned manner, because you are lamenting for that which is not worth lamenting for. Because you are identifying with the body. So, if you don't mind, this is applicable to your question also. Because to identify oneself as a Hindu is identifying with a bodily and social identification. And as Lord Krishna teaches us in Bhagavad Gita, we are not the body. So if we identify as Hindus, we have to unite, probably against the Muslims, then we're on the bodily platform. So the first thing to understand is that we're not the body. And then the goal of life is to become free from bodily identification, which is possible when we understand our true identity as eternal servants of Krishna. So Hinduism will never be united. Nothing in this material world will ever be united, because everyone has their own self-interest, and we cannot transcend self-interest as long as we identify with the body. Only when we, the same example Prabhupada has given here, when we know that the root of all existence is Krishna and offer everything to Him, then we can be united on that platform. Otherwise there's no question of unity. There may be unity for some time due to a sense of shared self-interest, but that won't last. Just like in politics, you'll find one political party supports another as long as its interest is served, and then they'll drop that party and go to another party who they're completely opposed to the day before. So there cannot be unity on the material platform, because the material platform by its very nature is divisive. So what is called Hinduism can actually be brought to its full and pure and best state by following the teachings of Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, as following his teachings as it is. So this temple is meant for propagating and practicing that. Otherwise, attempts at unity means that we just try to overlook the differences and merge all kinds of disparate factors into one, but it will never work. There are differences. There's a difference between right and wrong. So we have to come to the right platform. There's a difference between sat and asat. As long as you're on the platform of asat, then there cannot be unity. So we have to know what is sat. Do you know what is sat? You don't know. You do know or you don't know? What is Sat? What is reality? What is the highest truth? Do you know? You don't know, then you're also part of the problem. Because you're not educated. You have misused your human life in pursuing goals which are ultimately fruitless. To be a rich man is not the goal of life. To be a happy family man is also not the goal of life. Because that's also asat, that is temporary. Your two beautiful children will in course of time become haggled old people, if they live to be that old. And in the meantime, you, what is left of that body will be a picture on the wall, if they are so kind to keep your picture on the wall, after your haggled old body passes away. So, the proper use of human life is to understand what is param satyam. You don't know what is param satyam. You please come here. This Srimad Bhagavatam is for describing what is param satyam. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is not a, this is not a sectarian statement. But it is established by all Vedic literature that Krishna is param satyam. If you don't know this, if you don't act on this platform, then everything else you do is simply causing you to become more and more involved in illusion. So you're in a very dangerous situation, like everyone else in this world, who hasn't understood what is param satyam, the supreme truth. Then we're caught on the temporary platform, trying to be happy with family, home, friends, smiling at others, feeling nice, trying to be good. But we don't know what it means to be good unless we understand the param satya, Krishna. All right, you have, someone else had a question there? Otherwise we'll finish. More. There's a new one every day. Well, that's not... the main reason is because everyone's on the mundane platform. Muslims are also not united. You ever hear the news from Pakistan? They're fighting among themselves. Just say, for instance, that all the world converts to Islam. Do you think that all the wars will stop and fighting will stop? It's not going to stop anything. They're Muslims, the Sunni and Shia hate each other. So it's the cause of disunity is because of lack of knowledge of and commitment to the actual reality. They have only partial knowledge of reality, and unless they come in contact with pure devotees who teach them to totally change their attitude, that dharmasya hi arpavargyasya, dharma is meant not for anything material, then we must remain on the material platform, which is by its very nature fractious. If you say Hindus should become united, what does that mean? That means we're united against the Muslims, or you're going to... Then we identify ourselves in terms of some other grouping. We should identify as Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamalaya Dasu Dasana Dasa. This is the real identity of the Jiva. Hare Krishna. The next chapter is called Dhruva Maharaj Returns Home. Verse 1 will be discussed tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Okay, announce. Announce Karo. Padavak, padavak, padavak. Announce? You're going to announce? Hare Krishna.